for a dress, I said, standing in her doorway. She stopped typing and looked over at me. Good luck, she said. Thanks. I supposed there were worse things she could have said than, good luck, but the thought didn't make me feel any better. The formal wear store at the mall was packed with girls looking for prom dresses with their mothers. I didn't expect to feel the pang in my chest when I saw them. Girls were supposed to go wedding dress shopping with their mothers. They were supposed to step out of the dressing room in just the right dress, and the mother would tear up and say, "That's the one." I was pretty sure that was the way it was supposed to be. "Isn't it a little late in the year for prom?" I asked Taylor. "Wasn't ours in, like, May?" "My sister told me they had to push back prom this year because of some scandal with the assistant principal," she explained. "All the prom money went missing or something. So now it's a grom. Graduation prom." I laughed. Grom. "Also, the private schools always have their prom later, remember? Collegiate, St. Joe's." "I only went to one prom," I reminded her. "One had been more than enough for me." I wandered around the store and found one dress I liked. It was strapless, blinding white. I'd never known there were degrees of white before. I'd just thought white was white. When I found Taylor, she had a whole stack of dresses on her arm. We had to wait in line for a dressing room. The girl in front of me told her mother, "I will freak out if someone wears the same dress as me." Taylor and I rolled our eyes at each other. "I will freak out," Taylor mouthed. It seemed like we waited in that line forever. "Try this one on first," Taylor ordered when it was my turn. Dutifully, I obeyed her. "Come out!" Taylor yelled from her chair by the three-way mirror. She was camped out with the other mothers. "I don't think I like it," I called out. "It's too sparkly. I look like Glinda the Good Witch or something." "Just come out and let me see you!" I came out. And there were already a couple of other girls at the mirror, checking themselves out from the back. I stood behind them. Then the girl from earlier stepped out in the same dress I had on, but in a champagne color. She saw me, and right away she asked, "Which prom are you going to?" Taylor and I looked at each other in the mirror. Taylor was covering her mouth, giggling. I said, "I'm not going to prom." Taylor said, "She's getting married!" The girl's mouth hung open. "How old are you? You look so young." "I'm not that young," I said. "I'm 19. I wouldn't be 19 until August, but 19 sounded a lot older than 18. "Oh," she said, "I thought we were like the same age." I looked at us in the mirror as we stood there in the same dress. I thought we looked the same age, too. I saw her mother looking at me and whispering to the lady next to her, and I could feel myself blush. Taylor saw, too, and said loudly, "You can hardly even tell she's 3 months pregnant." The woman gasped. She shook her head at me, and I gave her a little shrug. Then Taylor grabbed my hand, and we ran back to my dressing room, laughing. "You're a good friend," I said, as she unzipped me. We looked at each other in the mirror. Me in my white dress and her in her cutoffs and flip-flops. I felt like I was going to cry. But then Taylor saved it. She made me laugh instead. She crossed her eyes and stuck her tongue out sideways. It felt good to laugh again. 3 more stores later, we sat in the food court, still no dress. Taylor ate French fries, and I ate frozen yogurt with rainbow sprinkles. My feet hurt, and I was already wanting to go home. The day wasn't turning out to be as fun as I'd hoped it would be. Taylor leaned across the table and dipped an already ketchuped French fry into my frozen yogurt. I snatched the cup away from her. "Taylor, that's disgusting!" She shrugged. "This, coming from the girl who puts powdered sugar on Cap'n Crunch?" Handing me a fry, she said, "Just try it." I dipped it into the cup, careful not to get any sprinkles on it. because that would just be too gross. I popped the fry into my mouth. Not bad. Swallowing, I said. What if we can't find a dress? We'll find a dress, she assured me, handing me another fry. Don't get all Debbie Downer on me yet. She was right. We found it at the next store. It was the last one I tried on. Everything else had been only so-so or too expensive. This dress was long and white and silky and something you could wear on the beach. It was not that expensive, which was important. But most important of all, when I looked in the mirror, I could picture myself getting married in it. Nervously, I stepped out, smoothing the dress down on my sides. I looked up at her. What do you think? Her eyes were shining. It's perfect. Just perfect. You think? Come look at yourself in this mirror and you tell me, biatch. Giggling, I stepped up on the platform and stared at myself in the three-way mirror. This was it. This was the one. Chapter 26. That night I tried on my dress again and called Jeremiah. I found my dress, I told him. I'm wearing it right now. What's it look like? It's a surprise, but I promise it's really pretty. Taylor and I found it at the fifth store we went to. It didn't even cost that much. I ran my hand along the silky fabric. It fits me perfectly, so I won't have to get alterations or anything.
So why do you sound so sad, then?
I sat down on the floor, hugging my knees to my chest. I don't know. Maybe because my mom wasn't there to help me pick it out. I thought buying a wedding dress was supposed to be this special thing you do with your mom, and she wasn't there. It was nice with Taylor, but I wish my mom had been there, too. Jeremiah was quiet. Then he said,
Did you ask her to go with you?
No. Not really. But she knew I wanted her there. I just hate that she's not a part of this. I'd left my bedroom door open, hoping my mom might walk by, might see me in the dress and stop. She hadn't so far.
She'll come around.
I hope so. I don't know if I can picture getting married without my mom there. You know? I heard Jer let out a little sigh.
Yeah, me either,
he said. And I knew he was thinking of Susanna. The next morning, my mother and I were eating breakfast, my mother with her yogurt with muesli and me with my frozen waffles, when the doorbell rang. My mother looked up from her newspaper. Are you expecting someone? She asked me. I shook my head and got up to see who it was. I opened the front door, figuring it would be Taylor with more bridal magazines. Instead, it was Jeremiah. He had a bouquet of lilies and he had on a nice shirt, white buttoned down with faint blue checks. I clapped my hands over my mouth in delight. What are you doing here? I shrieked from behind my hands. He hugged me to him. I could smell McDonald's coffee on his breath. He must have woken up really early to get here. Jeremiah loved McDonald's breakfasts, but he could never wake up early enough to get one. He said,
Don't get too excited. These aren't for you. Is Laurel here?
I felt swoony and dazed. She's eating breakfast, I said. Come on in. I opened the door for him, and he followed me inside to the kitchen. Brightly, I said, Mom, look who's here. My mother looked astonished. Her spoon halfway to her mouth. Jeremiah! Jeremiah walked over to her, flowers in hand.
I just had to come and greet my future mother-in-law properly, he said, grinning his impish grin.
He kissed her on the cheek and set the flowers by her bowl of yogurt. I was watching closely. If anybody could charm my mother, it was Jeremiah. Already I could feel the tension in our house being lifted. She smiled a smile that looked brittle,
but it was a smile nonetheless. She stood up. "I'm glad you came," she said. "I've been wanting to talk to the both of you." Jeremiah rubbed his hands together. "All ready?" "Let's do this. Belly, get over here. Group hug first." My mother tried not to laugh as Jeremiah gave her a bear hug. He motioned for me to join in, and I came up behind my mother and hugged her around the waist. She couldn't help it. A laugh escaped. "All right, all right. Let's go into the living room. Jer, have you eaten?" I answered for him. "Egg McMuffin, right, Jer?" He winked at me.
"You know me so well."
My mother had already stepped into the living room, her back to us. "I can smell McDonald's on your breath," I told him in a low voice. He clapped his hand over his mouth, looking self-conscious, which was rare for him.
"Does it smell bad?"
he asked me. I felt so much tenderness toward him in that moment. "No," I told him, "not at all." The three of us sat in the living room, Jeremiah and I on the couch, my mother in an armchair facing us. Everything was going so well. He had made my mother laugh. I hadn't seen her laugh or smile since we'd told her. I started to feel hopeful, like this might actually work. The first thing she said was, "Jeremiah, you know I love you. I want nothing but the best for you. That's why I can't support what you two are doing." Jeremiah leaned forward. "Lore," my mother held up her hand. "You're just too young. Both of you. You're both still gestating and becoming the people you will one day be. You're still children. You aren't ready for a commitment like this. I'm talking about a lifetime here, Jeremiah." Eagerly, he said, "Laurel, I want to be with Belly for a lifetime. I can commit to that easy." My mother shook her head. "And that's how I know you're not ready, Jeremiah. You take things too lightly. This isn't the kind of thing you undertake on a whim. This is serious." The condescension in her voice really pissed me off. I was 18 years old, not 8, and Jeremiah was 19. We were old enough to know that marriage was serious. We'd seen the way our parents had screwed up their own marriages. We weren't going to make the same mistakes. But I didn't say anything. I knew that if I got mad or tried to argue, it would only prove her point. So I just sat there. "I want you two to wait. I want Belly to finish school. When she graduates, if you two still feel the same way, do it then. But only after she graduates. If Beck was here, she'd agree with me."
"I think she'd be really happy for us," Jeremiah said.
Before my mother could contradict him, he added, "Belly will still finish college on time, I can promise you that. I'll take good care of her. Just give us your blessing." He reached out and touched her hand and gave it a playful shake.
"Come on, Lore. You know you've always wanted me for a son-in-law."
My mother looked pained.
"Not like this, hun. I'm sorry."
There was a long, awkward pause. As the three of us sat there, I could feel myself start to tear up. Jeremiah put his arm around me and clasped my shoulder. Then he let go. "Does this mean you aren't coming to the wedding?" I asked her. Shaking her head, she said, "Isabel, what wedding? You don't have the money to pay for a wedding. That's for us to worry about, not you," I said. "I just want to know, are you coming?"
"I already gave you my answer. No, I won't be there."
"How can you say that?" I let out a breath, trying to keep calm. "You're just mad that you don't get a say in this. You don't get a say in what happens, and it's killing you." "Yes, it is killing me," she snapped. "Watching you make such a stupid decision is killing me." My mother fixed her eyes on me, and I turned my head away from her, my knees shaking. I couldn't listen to her anymore. She was poisoning our good news with all her doubts and negativity. She was twisting everything. I stood up. "Then I'll leave. You won't have to watch anymore." Jeremiah looked startled.
"Come on, Belle, sit down."
"I can't stay here," I said. My mother didn't say a word. She just sat there, her back ramrod straight. I walked out of the living room and up the stairs. In my room, I packed quickly, throwing a stack of t-shirts and underwear into a suitcase. I was throwing my toiletries bag on top of the heap when Jeremiah came into my room. He closed the door behind him. He sat down on my bed. "What just happened?" he asked, still looking dazed. I didn't answer him. I kept packing. "What are you doing?" he asked me. "What does it look like?" "Okay, but do you have a plan?" I zipped up my suitcase. "Yes, I have a plan. I'm staying at the cousin's house until the wedding. I can't deal with her." Jeremiah sucked in his breath. "Are you serious? You heard her. She isn't changing her mind. This is the way she wants it." He hesitated. "I don't know. What about your job? You're the one who told me I should quit." "It's better this way. I can plan the wedding better in Cousins than I can here." I was sweating as I heaved up my suitcase. "If she can't get on board this train, then that's too bad, because this is happening." Jeremiah tried to take the suitcase from me, but I told him not to bother. I lugged it down the stairs and to the car without a word to or from my mother. She didn't ask where we were going, and she didn't ask when I was coming back. On the way out of town, we stopped at Bear's. Jer waited for me in his car while I went inside. If I hadn't just had a fight with my mother, I never would have had the nerve to quit like that. Even though people came and went all the time at Bear's, especially students, still. I went straight back to the kitchen and found my manager, Stacy, and told her I was sorry. But as it turned out, I was getting married in 2 months and I couldn't keep working there. Stacy eyed my stomach and then my ring finger and said, "Congratulations, Isabel. Just so you know, there's always a place for you here at Bear's." Alone in my car again, I cried loud, ragged sobs. I cried until my throat hurt. I was mad at my mom. But bigger than that was this overwhelming, heavy sadness. I was grown up enough to do things on my own, without her. I could get married. I could quit my job. I was a big girl now. I didn't have to ask for her permission. My mother was no longer all-powerful. Part of me wished she still could be. Chapter 27. We were half an hour from Cousins when Jeremiah called and said,
"Conrad's been staying in Cousins."
My whole body went stiff. We were at a stoplight and Jeremiah's car was in front of mine. Since when?
Since last week. He just stayed after the whole thing at the restaurant. He came back once to get his stuff, but I think he's going to spend the summer out here.
"Oh," I said. "Do you think he'll mind that I'm staying there?" I could hear Jer hesitate.
"No, I don't think he'll mind. I just wish I could be there too. If it wasn't for that stupid internship, I could be. Maybe I should just quit."
"You can't. Your dad will kill you."
"Yeah, I know."
I heard him hesitate again, and then he said,
"I don't feel right about the way we left things with your mom. Maybe you should go back home, Bells."
"It won't work. We'll just fight again." The light turned green. "You know, I actually think this could be for the best. It'll give us both space."
"If you say so,"
Jeremiah said, but I could tell he didn't completely agree. "Let's talk more when we get to the house," I said, and we hung up. This news that Conrad was in Cousins left me feeling uneasy. Maybe staying at the summer house wasn't the answer. But then, when I pulled into the empty driveway, I felt such incredible relief to be back. Home. I was back home. The house looked the same, tall and gray and white. It made me feel the same, like I was right where I belonged. Like I could breathe again. I was sitting in Jeremiah's lap on a lounge chair when we heard a car pull up. It was Conrad, getting out of the car with a bag of groceries. He looked taken aback to see us sitting there on the deck. I stood up and waved. Jeremiah stretched his hands behind his head and leaned back onto his chair.
"Hey, Con."
"What's up?"
he said, walking over to us.
"What are you guys doing here?"
Conrad set down the grocery bag and took a seat next to Jeremiah's, and I just sort of hovered above them.
Wedding stuff,
Jeremiah said vaguely.
Wedding stuff, Conrad repeated. So you guys are really doing it.
Hell yeah, we are. Jeremiah pulled me back onto his lap.
Right, wifey?
Don't call me wifey, I said, wrinkling my nose. Gross. Conrad ignored me.
Does that mean Laurel's changed her mind?
He asked Jer.
Not yet, but she will,
Jeremiah said, and I didn't correct him. I sat perched there for about 20 more seconds before I twisted out of his arms and stood up again. I'm starving, I said, leaning down and poking around Conrad's grocery bag. Did you buy anything good? Conrad gave me his bemused half-smile.
No Cheetos or frozen pizza for you in here. Sorry, I got stuff for dinner, though. I'll cook something for us.
He got up, took the grocery bag, and went into the house. For dinner, Conrad made a tomato, basil, and avocado salad, and he grilled chicken breasts. We ate outside on the deck. With a mouth full of chicken, Jeremiah said,
Wow, I'm impressed. Since when do you cook? Since I've been living on my own. This is pretty much all I eat. Chicken. Every day.
Conrad pushed the salad bowl toward me, not looking up.
Did you get enough?
Yeah. Thanks, Conrad. This is all really good.
Really good,
Jeremiah echoed. Conrad only shrugged, but the tips of his ears turned pink, and I knew he was pleased. I poked Jeremiah in the arm with my fork. You could learn a thing or two. He poked me back.
So could you.
He took a big bite of salad before announcing,
Belly's gonna stay here until the wedding. Is that cool with you, Con?
I could tell Conrad was surprised, because he didn't answer right away. I won't be in your way, I assured him. I'll just be doing wedding stuff.
It's fine. I don't care,
he said. I looked down at my plate. Thanks, I said. So I'd been worried about nothing. Conrad didn't care if I was there or not. It wasn't like we would have to hang out with each other. He would do his own thing the way he always did. I would be busy planning the wedding, and Jeremiah would drive up every Friday to help. It would be fine. After we finished eating dinner, Jeremiah suggested we all go get ice cream for dessert. Conrad declined, saying he would clean up. I said, the cook shouldn't have to clean up, but he said he didn't mind. Jer and I went into town. Just the two of us. I got a scoop of cookies and cream and a scoop of cookie dough with sprinkles in a waffle cone. Jeremiah got rainbow sherbet.
Are you feeling better?
He asked me as we walked around the boardwalk.
About what happened with your mom?
Not really, I said. I'd rather just not think about it anymore today. Jeremiah nodded.
Whatever you want.
I changed the subject. Did you figure out how many people you want to invite? I asked.
Yep.
He started to tick names off on his fingers.
Josh, Redbird, Gabe, Alex, Sanchez, Peterson.
You can't invite everyone in your fraternity.
They're my brothers,
he said, looking wounded. I thought we said we were keeping it really small.
So I'll just invite a few of them then. Okay?
Okay. We still have to figure out food, I said, licking my way around the cone so it wouldn't drip.
We could always get Con to grill some chicken,
Jeremiah said with a laugh. He's going to be your best man. He can't be sweating over the grill.
I was kidding.
Did you ask him yet? To be your best man?
Not yet. I will, though.
He leaned down and took a bite of my ice cream. He got some on his upper lip, like a milk mustache. I bit the insides of my cheeks to keep from smiling.
What's so funny?
Nothing. When we got back to the house, Conrad was watching TV in the living room. When we sat down on the couch, he got up.
I'm gonna hit the sack,
he said, stretching his arms over his head.
It's like 10 o'clock. Watch a movie with us,
Jeremiah said.
Nah, I'm gonna get up early tomorrow and surf. Wanna join me?
Jeremiah glanced at me before saying,
Yeah, sounds good.
I thought we were going to work on the guest list in the morning, I said.
I'll come back before you're even awake. Don't worry.
To Conrad, he said,
Knock on my door when you're up.
Conrad hesitated.
I don't want to wake up Belly.
I could feel myself blush. I don't mind, I said. Since Jeremiah and I had become boyfriend and girlfriend, we'd only been at the summer house together once. That time, I slept in his room with him. We watched TV until he fell asleep, because he liked to sleep with the television on in the background. I couldn't fall asleep like that, so I waited until he did and then I turned it off. It felt kind of strange, sleeping in his bed when mine was just down the hall. At college, we slept in the same bed all the time, and that felt normal. But here, at the summer house, I just wanted to sleep in my own room, in my own bed. It was familiar to me. It made me feel like a little girl still on vacation with her whole family. My paper-thin sheets with the faded yellow rosebuds. My cherry wood dresser and vanity. I used to have two white twin beds, but Susanna got rid of them and put in what she'd called a big girl bed. I loved that bed. Conrad went upstairs, and I waited until I heard his bedroom door shut before I said, "Maybe I'll sleep in my room tonight."
"Why?" Jeremiah asked. "I promise I'll be quiet when I get up."
Carefully, I asked, "Aren't the bride and groom supposed to sleep in different beds before the wedding?"
"Yeah, but that's the night before the wedding, not every night before the wedding."
He looked hurt for a second, and then he said in his joking way,
"Come on, you know I won't touch you."
Even though I knew he was only kidding, it still stung a little. It's not that. Sleeping in my own room makes me feel normal. It's different than at school. At school, sleeping with you next to me feels normal, but here, I like remembering what it used to feel like. I searched his face to see if any of the hurt was still there. Does that make sense at all?
I guess.
Jeremiah looked unconvinced, and I started to wish I'd never brought it up. I scooted closer to him, putting my feet in his lap. "You'll have me next to you every night for the rest of our lives."
"Yeah, I guess that'll be plenty,"
he said. "Hey," I said, kicking out my leg. Jeremiah just smiled and put a pillow over my feet. Then he changed the channel and we watched TV without saying anything more about it. When it was time to go to bed, he went to his room, and I went to mine. I slept better than I had in weeks. Chapter 28 Conrad.
I asked Jer if he wanted to surf because I wanted to get him alone so I could find out what the hell was going on. I hadn't talked to him since he made his grand announcement at the restaurant. But now that we were alone, I didn't know what to say. We bobbed on our surfboards, waiting for the next wave. It had been slow out there so far. I cleared my throat. "So, how pissed is Laurel?"
"Pissed," Jer said, grimacing. "Billy and her had a pretty big fight yesterday."
"In front of you?"
"Yeah."
"Shit." I wasn't surprised, though. There was no way Laurel was going to be like, "Sure, I'll throw my teenage daughter a wedding."
"Yeah, pretty much."
"What does Dad say about all this?"
He gave me a funny look. "Since when do you care what Dad says?"
I looked out toward the house. I hesitated before saying, "I don't know. If Laurel's against it, and Dad's against it, maybe you shouldn't do it. I mean, you guys are still in college. You don't even have a job. When you think about it, it's kind of ridiculous." My voice trailed off. Jer was shooting daggers at me. "Stay out of it, Conrad," he said. He was practically spitting.
"All right.
Sorry.
I didn't mean to.
I'm sorry.
I never asked for your opinion. This is between me and Belly," I said. "You're right. Forget it. Jeremiah didn't answer. He looked over his shoulder, and then he started to paddle away. As the wave crested, he popped up and rode it to shore. I punched my hand through the water. I wanted to kick his ass. This is between me and Belly, smug piece of shit. He was marrying my girl, and I couldn't do anything about it. I just had to watch it happen. Because he was my brother. Because I promised. Take care of him, Connie. I'm counting on you.
Chapter 29. When I got up the next morning, the boys were still surfing, so I took my binder and my legal pad and a glass of milk out to the deck. According to Taylor's checklist, we had to get the guest list figured out before we could do anything else. That made sense. Otherwise, how would we know how much food we needed and everything? So far, my list was short. Taylor, her mom, a couple of the girls we'd grown up with, Marcy and Blair and maybe Katie, Annika, my dad, Stephen, and my mother. And I didn't even know if my mother was coming. My dad would. I knew he would. No matter what my mother said, he'd be there. I wanted my grandma to come too, but she'd moved out of her house in Florida and into a nursing home the year before. She'd never liked traveling, and now she couldn't. In her invitation, I decided I would write a note promising to visit with Jeremiah over fall break. That was pretty much it for me. I had a few cousins on my dad's side, but none I was particularly close to. Jeremiah had Conrad, three of his fraternity brothers, like we agreed, his freshman year roommate, and his dad. Last night, Jer told me he could tell his dad was softening. He said Mr. Fisher asked about who was marrying us and how much we were planning on spending on this so-called wedding. Jer told him our budget, $1,000. Mr. Fisher had snorted. To me, $1,000 was a lot of money. Last year, it took me the whole summer to save that much waitressing at Bear's. Our guest list would be under 20 people. With 20 people, we could have a clam bake and feed everyone, easy. We could get a few kegs and some cheap champagne. Since we'd be marrying on the beach, we wouldn't even need decorations. Just some flowers for the picnic tables. Or shells. Shells and flowers. I was on a roll with this wedding. Taylor was going to be proud of me. I was writing down my ideas as Jeremiah came up the steps. The sun blazed behind him, so bright it hurt my eyes. Morning, I said, squinting up at him. Where's Con?
He's still out there.
Jeremiah sat down next to me. Grinning, he asked,
"Aw, did you do all the work without me?"
He was dripping wet. A drop of seawater splashed down on my notepad. "You wish," I wiped at the water. "Hey, what do you think about a clam bake?"
"I like a good clam bake,"
he agreed. "How many kegs do you think we'd need for 20 people?"
"If Peterson and Gomez are coming, that's two already."
I pointed my pen at his chest. We said three brothers, and that's it, right? He nodded, and then he leaned forward and kissed me. His lips tasted salty, and his face was cool against my warm one. I nuzzled his cheek before I broke away. "If you get Taylor's binder wet, she'll kill you," I warned, putting it behind me. Jeremiah made a sad face, and then he took my arms and put them around his neck like we were slow dancing.
"I can't wait to marry you,"
he murmured into my neck. I giggled. I was super ticklish on my neck, and he knew it. He knew almost everything about me, and he still loved me.
"And what about you?"
"What about me?" He blew on my neck, and I burst out laughing. I tried to wriggle away from him, but he wouldn't let me. Still giggling, I said, "Okay, I can't wait to marry you either." Jer left later that afternoon. I walked him out to his car. Conrad's car wasn't in the driveway.
I didn't know where he'd gone off to.
Call me when you get home so I know you got there safe, I said.
He nodded. He was being quiet, which was unlike him. I guessed he was sad to be leaving so soon. I wished he could stay longer, too. I really did.
I got on my tiptoes and gave him a big hug. See you in 5 days, I said.
See you in 5 days, he repeated.
I watched him drive off, my thumbs hooked in the belt loops of my cutoffs. When I couldn't see his car anymore, I headed back inside the house.
Chapter 30. That first week in Cousins, I steered clear of Conrad. I couldn't deal with one more person telling me that I was making a mistake, especially judgy Conrad. He didn't even have to say it with words. He could judge with his eyes. So I got up earlier than him and ate meals before he did. And when he watched TV in the living room, I stayed upstairs in my room addressing invitations and looking at wedding blogs that Taylor had bookmarked for me. I doubt he even noticed. He was pretty busy, too. He surfed, he hung out with friends, he worked on the house. I'd never have known he was handy if I didn't see it with my own two eyes. Conrad on a ladder checking the air conditioning vents. Conrad repainting the mailbox. I saw it all from my bedroom window. I was eating a strawberry Pop-Tart on the deck when he came jogging up the steps. He'd been out all morning. His hair was sweaty, and he was wearing an old t-shirt from his high school football days and a pair of navy gym shorts. Hey, I said. Where are you coming from?
The gym, Conrad said, walking past me.
Then he stopped short.
Is that what you're eating for breakfast?
I was munching around the edge of the Pop-Tart. Yeah, but it's my last one. Sorry. He ignored me.
I left cereal out on the counter. There's fruit in the fruit bowl, too.
I shrugged. I thought it was yours. I didn't want to eat your stuff without asking. Impatiently, he said,
Then why didn't you ask?
I was taken aback. How could I ask when I've barely even seen you? We scowled at each other for about 3 seconds before I saw a smile tugging at the corners of his mouth.
Fair enough, he said,
and his trace of a smile was already gone. He started to slide the glass door open, and then he turned and said,
Whatever I buy, you can eat.
Same here, I said. That almost smile again.
You can keep your Pop-Tarts and your Funyuns and your Kraft mac and cheese all to yourself.
Hey, I eat other stuff besides just junk, I protested.
Sure you do,
he said, and he went inside. The next morning, the cereal box was out on the counter again. This time, I helped myself to his cereal and to his skim milk. I even cut up a banana to put on top. It wasn't half bad. Conrad was turning out to be a pretty good housemate. He always put the seat back down on the toilet. He did his dishes right away. He even bought more paper towels when we ran out. I wouldn't have expected any less, though. Conrad had always been neat. He was the exact opposite of Jeremiah in that way. Jeremiah never changed the roll of toilet paper. It would never occur to him to buy paper towels or to soak a greasy pan in hot water and dishwashing soap. I went to the grocery store later that day and bought stuff for dinner. Spaghetti and sauce and lettuce and tomato for a salad. I cooked it around 7, thinking, Ha! This will show him how healthily I can eat. I ended up overcooking the pasta and not rinsing the lettuce thoroughly enough, but it still tasted fine. Conrad didn't come home, though, so I ate it alone in front of the TV. I did put some leftovers on a plate for him, though, and I left it on the counter when I went up to bed. The next morning, it was gone, and the dish was washed.
Chapter 31.
The next time Conrad and I spoke to each other, it was the middle of the day and I was sitting at the kitchen table with my wedding binder. Now that we had our guest list, the next thing I needed to do was mail off our invitations. It almost seemed silly to bother with invitations when we had so few guests, but a mass email didn't feel quite right either. I got the invitations from David's Bridal. They were white with light turquoise shells, and all I had to do was run them through the printer. And poof! Wedding invitations. Conrad opened the sliding door and stepped into the kitchen. His gray t-shirt was soaked in sweat, so I guessed he'd gone for a run. Good run? I asked him.
Yeah,
he said, looking surprised. He looked at my stack of envelopes and asked,
Wedding invitations?
Yep, I just need to go get stamps. Pouring himself a glass of water, he said,
I need to go into town and get a new drill at the hardware store. The post office is on the way. I can get your stamps.
It was my turn to look surprised. Thanks, I said, but I want to go and see what kind of love stamps they have. He downed his water. Do you know what a love stamp is? I didn't wait for him to answer. It's a stamp that says love on it. People use them for weddings. I only know because Taylor told me I had to get them. Conrad half smiled and said,
We can take my car if you want. Save you a trip.
Sure, I said.
I'm going to take a quick shower. Give me 10 minutes, he said, and ran up the stairs.
Conrad was back downstairs in 10 minutes, just like he said. He grabbed his keys off the counter, I slid my invitations into my purse, and then we headed out to the driveway. We can take my car, I offered.
I don't mind, he said.
It felt sort of funny sitting in the passenger seat of Conrad's car again. His car was clean. It still smelled the same. I can't remember the last time I was in your car, I said, turning on the radio. Without missing a beat, he said,
Your prom. Oh, God. Prom.
The sight of our breakup. Us fighting in the parking lot in the rain. It was embarrassing to think of it now. How I had cried. How I had begged him not to go. Not one of my finest moments. There was an awkward silence between us, and I had a feeling we were both remembering the same thing. To fill the silence, I said brightly, Gosh, that was like a million years ago, huh? This time, he didn't reply. Conrad dropped me off in front of the post office and said he'd be back to pick me up in a few minutes. I hopped out of the car and ran inside. The line moved quickly, and when it was my turn, I said, Can I see your love stamp, please? The woman behind the counter rifled through her drawer and slid a sheet of stamps over to me. They had wedding bells on them, and love was inscribed on a ribbon tying the bells together. I set my stack of invitations on the counter and counted them quickly. I'll take a sheet, I said. Eyeing me, she asked, Are those wedding invitations? Yes, I said. Do you want to hand-cancel them? Pardon? Do you want to hand-cancel them? She repeated, and this time she sounded annoyed. I panicked. What did hand-cancel mean? I wanted to text Taylor and ask, but there was a line growing behind me, so I said hastily, No, thank you. After I paid for the stamps, I went outside, sat on the curb, and stamped all my invitations. One for my mother, too. Just in case. She could still change her mind. There was still a chance. Conrad drove up as I was pushing them through the mail slot outside. This was really happening. I was really getting married. No turning back now. Not that I wanted to. Climbing into the car, I asked, Did you get your new drill?
Yep, he said. Did you find your love stamps?
Yep, I said. Hey, what does it mean to hand-cancel mail?
Canceling is when the post office marks the stamp so it can't be used again. I guess hand-canceling would be doing it by hand instead of machine.
How did you know that? I asked, impressed.
I used to collect stamps.
That was right. He had collected stamps. I'd forgotten. He kept them in a photo album his dad gave him. I totally forgot about that. Holy crap, you were so serious about your stamps. You wouldn't even let us touch your book without permission. Remember how Jeremiah stole one and used it to send a postcard and you were so mad you cried?
Hey, that was my Abraham Lincoln stamp that my grandpa gave me, Conrad said defensively. That was a rare stamp.
I laughed, and then he did, too. It was a nice sound. When was the last time we'd laughed like this? Shaking his head, he said,
I was such a little geek.
No, you weren't!
Conrad threw me a look. Stamp collecting. Chemistry set. Encyclopedia obsession.
Yeah, but you made all of that seem cool, I said. In my memory, Conrad was no geek. He was older, smarter, interested in grown-up things.
You were gullible,
he said.
And then, when you were really little, you hated carrots. You wouldn't eat them. But then I told you that if you ate carrots, you'd get X-ray vision. And you believed me. You used to believe everything I said.
I did. I really did. I believed him when he said that carrots could give me X-ray vision. I believed him when he told me that he'd never cared about me. And then, later that night, when he tried to take it back, I guess I believed him again. Now I didn't know what to believe. I just knew I didn't believe in him anymore. I changed the subject. Abruptly, I asked, are you going to stay in California after you graduate?
It depends on med school,
he said. Do you have a girlfriend? I saw him start. I saw him hesitate.
No,
he said. Chapter 32. Conrad.
Her name was Agnes. A lot of people called her Aggie, but I stuck with Agnes. She was in my chem class. On any other girl, a name like Agnes wouldn't have worked. It was an old lady name. Agnes had short, dirty blonde hair. It was wavy, and she had it cut at her chin. Sometimes she wore glasses, and her skin was as pale as milk. When we were waiting for the lab to open up one day, she asked me out. I was so surprised, I said yes. We started hanging out a lot. I liked being around her. She was smart, and her hair carried the smell of her shampoo, not just fresh out of the shower, but for a whole day. We spent most of our time together, studying. Sometimes we'd go get pancakes or burgers after. Sometimes we'd hook up in her room during a study break when her roommate wasn't around. But it was all centered around both of us being pre-med. It wasn't like I spent the night in her room or invited her to stay over in mine. I didn't hang out with her and her friends or meet her parents, even though they lived nearby. One day we were studying in the library. The semester was almost over. We'd been dating 2, almost 3 months. Out of nowhere, she asked me, have you ever been in love? Not only was Agnes good at no chem, she was really good at catching me off guard. I looked around to see if anyone was listening. Have you?
I asked you first, she said.
Then yes.
How many times?
Once.
Agnes absorbed my answer as she chewed on her pencil. On a scale of 1 to 10, how in love were you?
You can't put being in love on a scale, I said. Either you are or you aren't.
But if you had to say...
I started flipping through my notes. I didn't look at her when I said, 10.
Wow. What was her name?
Agnes, come on. We have an exam on Friday.
Agnes made a pouty face and kicked my leg under the table. If you don't tell me, I won't be able to concentrate. Please, just humor me.
I let out a short breath. Belly. I mean, Isabel.
Satisfied? Shaking her head, she said, uh-uh, now tell me how you met.
Agnes,
I swear I'll stop if you just answer.
I watched her count in her head.
3 more questions. 3 and that's it.
I didn't say yes or no. I just looked at her, waiting.
So, how did you meet?
We never really met. I just always knew her.
When did you know you were in love?
I didn't have an answer to that question. There hadn't been one specific moment. It was like gradually waking up. You go from being asleep to the space between dreaming and awake and then into consciousness. It's a slow process. But when you're awake, there's no mistaking it. There was no mistaking that it had been love. But I wasn't going to say that to Agnes. I don't know, it just happened. She looked at me, waiting for me to go on. You have one more question, I said.
Are you in love with me?
Like I said, this girl was really good at catching me off guard. I didn't know what to say. Because the answer was, no. Her face fell, and then she tried to sound upbeat as she said,
so no. Huh?
Well, are you in love with me?
I could be. If I let myself, I think I could be.
Oh. I felt like a piece of shit. I really do like you, Agnes.
I know. I can feel that that's true. You're an honest guy, Conrad. But you don't let people in. It's impossible to get close to you.
She tried to put her hair in a ponytail, but the front pieces kept falling out because it was so short. Then she released her hair and said,
I think you still love that other girl. At least a little bit. Am I right?
No, I told Belly.
I don't believe you, she said, tilting her head to one side. Teasingly, she said, if there wasn't a girl, why would you stay away for so long? There has to be a girl.
There was. I'd stayed away for 2 years. I had to. I knew I shouldn't even be at the summer house, because being there, being near her, I would just want what I couldn't have. It was dangerous. She was the one person I didn't trust myself around. The day she showed up with Jer, I called my friend Danny to see if I could crash on his couch for a while, and he'd said yes, but I couldn't bring myself to do it. I couldn't leave. I knew I had to be careful. I had to keep my distance. If she knew how much I still cared, it was all over. I wouldn't be able to walk away again. The first time was hard enough. The promises you make on your mother's deathbed are promises that are absolute. They're titanium. There's no way you're breaking them. I promised my mother that I would take care of my brother, that I would look after him. I kept my word. I did it the best way I could. By leaving. I might have been a fuck-up and a failure and a disappointment, but I wasn't a liar. I did lie to Belly, though. Just that one time, in that crappy motel, I did it to protect her. That's what I kept telling myself. Still, if there was one moment in my life I could redo, one moment out of all the shitty moments, that was the one I'd pick. When I thought back to the look on her face, the way it just crumpled. How she'd sucked in her lips and wrinkled her nose to keep the hurt from showing. It killed me. God, if I could, I'd go back to that moment and say all the right things. I'd tell her I loved her. I'd make it so that she never looked that way again.
Chapter 33 Conrad.
That night in the motel, I didn't sleep. I went over and over everything that had ever happened between us. I couldn't keep doing it, going back and forth, holding her close and then pushing her away. It wasn't right. When Belly got up to shower around dawn, Jer and I got up too. I was folding my blanket up when I said, "It's okay if you like her." Jer stared at me, his mouth hanging open. What are you talking about? I felt like I was choking as I said, it's okay with me. If you want to be with her. He looked at me like I was crazy. I felt like I'd gone crazy. I heard the water in the shower shut off, and I turned away from him and said, "Just take care of her." And then, when she came out, dressed, her hair wet, she looked at me with those hopeful eyes, and I looked back at her like I didn't recognize her. Completely blank. I saw her eyes dim. I saw her love for me die. I'd killed it. When I thought about it now, that moment in the motel, I understood I was the one who'd set this thing in motion, pushed them together. It was my doing. I was the one who was going to have to live with it. They were happy. I'd been doing a pretty good job of making myself scarce, but I happened to be home that Friday afternoon when, out of nowhere, Belly needed me. She was sitting on the living room floor with that stupid binder, papers all around her. She looked freaked out, stressed. She had that worried grimace on her face, the look she'd get when she was working on a math problem and she couldn't figure it out. "Jer's stuck in city traffic," she said, blowing her hair out of her face. "I told him to leave earlier. I really needed his help today." "What did you need him to do?" "We were gonna go to Michael's, you know, that craft store." Dryly, I said, "I can't say I've ever been to a Michael's before." I hesitated, then added, "But if you want, I'll go with you."
"Really? Because I'm picking up some heavy stuff today. The store is all the way over in Plymouth, though."
"Sure, no problem," I said, feeling inexplicably gratified to be lifting heavy stuff. We took her car because it was bigger. She drove. I'd only ever ridden with her a few times. This side of her was new to me. Assured. Confident. She drove fast, but she was still in control. I liked it. I found myself sneaking peeks at her, and I had to force myself to cool it. "You're not a bad driver," I said. She grinned. "Jeremiah taught me well." "That's right. He taught her how to drive. So what else about you has changed?"
"Hey, I was never not a good driver,"
I snorted, then looked out the window. "I think Steve would disagree.
He'll never let me live down what I did to his precious baby."
She shifted gears as we came to a stoplight.
"So what else?"
"You wear heels now. At the garden ceremony, you had on high heels." There was a minute hesitation before she said,
"Yeah, sometimes. I still trip in them, though."
Ruefully, she added, "I'm like a real lady now." I reached out to touch her hand, but at the last second I pointed instead. "You still bite your nails." She curled her fingers around the steering wheel. With a little smile, she said, "You don't miss a thing." "Okay, so what are we picking up here? Flower holders?"
Belly laughed. "Yeah, flower holders. In other words, vases."
She grabbed a cart, and I took it from her and pushed it in front of us.
"I think we decided on hurricane vases."
"What's a hurricane vase? And how the hell does Jer know what one is?"
"I didn't mean Jer and I decided. I meant me and Taylor."
She grabbed the cart and walked ahead of me. I followed her to aisle 12.
"See?"
Belly held up a fat glass vase. I crossed my arms. "Very nice," I said in a bored voice. She put down the vase and picked up a skinnier one, and she didn't look at me as she said,
"I'm sorry you're the one stuck doing this with me. I know it's lame."
"It's not that lame," I said. I started grabbing vases off the shelf. "How many do we need?"
"Wait, should we get the big ones or the medium ones? I'm thinking maybe the medium ones," she said, lifting one up and checking the price tag. "Yeah, definitely the medium ones. I only see a few left. Can you go ask somebody who works here?"
"The big ones," I said, because I'd already stacked four of the big ones in the cart. "The big ones are much nicer. You can fit more flowers or sand or whatever."
Belly narrowed her eyes. "You're just saying that because you don't want to go find somebody."
"Okay, yeah, but seriously, I think the big ones are nicer." She shrugged and put another big vase in the cart.
"I guess we could just have one big vase on each table instead of two medium-sized ones."
"Now what?" I started to push the cart again, and she took it from me.
"Candles."
I followed her down another aisle. then another. I don't think you know where you're going, I said.
I'm taking you on the scenic route, she said, steering the car.